The Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce is your source for business-to-business connection in Wallingford and North Haven. Since 1915, the Chamber has been serving your community with business promotion, networking opportunities, themed events, and a complete resource of business and organizational supports. Join the Chamber today. Call 203-269-9891 or go online at www.quincham.com. QUINNCHAM.com. The Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce. And welcome to another edition of the Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce podcast. I'm Executive Director Ray Andrewson, and these podcasts are brought to you by Guilford Savings Bank. And we are very proud to have them promote this wonderful opportunity for our members to discuss what they do, how they do it, where they do it, and some of the heritage businesses, some of the individual solopreneurs, large-scale manufacturing that are all members of the Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce. We are very privileged and very blessed in this instance because we have, believe it or not, our oldest standing member of the Quinnipiac Chamber that we will be discussing what they do and interviewed here today. Matthew Bailey has been part of a family, a longstanding heritage business in Wallingford with B.C. Bailey Funeral Home, and they care. And it's no doubt that B.C., or I should say Bailey Cares, is their website. And to give you a little more information about Matthew and the organization, they were established as far back as 1879 in Wallingford. The oldest chamber member, the Quinnipiac Chamber, established in 1915. They joined in 1916, right away. And the most important thing you need to know about Matthew and the organization and the recognition of their peers in the industry is that in 2021, Matt was named Funeral Director of the Year by the American Funeral Director magazine as a role model, as an innovator, and as someone who's very compassionate and good at what they do. Matthew Bailey, welcome. It's good to have you here.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
Well, and thank you, I think, from a lot of families, because I think when you are a heritage funeral parlor, and I don't even know if parlor is the correct word to use anymore, but a funeral service that you provide, generations have known your business here in town in the region.
Yeah, we go back, you know, multiple generations. That was one of the things that really inspired me to become a funeral director. I never really intended on doing it. My dad didn't push it upon me or my siblings, and we were kept fairly separate from the company itself growing up. And my first exposure was when I was finishing my undergraduate degree. And I needed a job one summer, and I worked for him, and I was just amazed by the people that would come up to me and they would say, you know, your dad, you know, helped us out when we lost a child 30 years ago and we didn't know what we were going to do. Or I remember your grandfather, or, you know, I remember your great uncle, John, or I remember, you know, they would have these connections to multiple generations of my family, multiple generations of their family. And it touched me and inspired me. And I said, this is really special. And that's something I wanted to be part of.
So that family tradition that you've held, of course, aligns with family traditions that you encounter with all the families and their time really of need and in some cases crisis. Let's gently, because it is such a sensitive topic in some way, talk about how you employ your compassion and work with families. Death is never easy. Sometimes, I guess, for someone who's been sick or in hospice are really challenged, it could be a relief to the family and a person who really wants to have their time on earth expire and end. And then there's tragedy, someone who dies from an illness early on, or a child, as you mentioned. So it's the great equalizer. We'll all get there, but you have to meet with a variety of people under different circumstances, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, everyone comes through our doors eventually, and the circumstances under which it happens is always unique, and it's always different. And no loss is the same, and no one experiences grief the same way. And there's a great writer on grief by the name of Doug Manning, who's become a friend of mine. And he is an expression that he came up with that he describes his own writing. He says, you know, he says he's not an expert on grief because there are no experts on grief, because everyone's journey is different and everyone's journey is unique. So I think that's one of the first things that a good funeral director learns, is that you don't have any magic words, and there's no, you know, one perfect recipe that you adopt that works. We're really guides for people. So we're, on the worst day of someone's life, when they have to make a decision on who they're going to call and who they're going to turn to, when they put their confidence in us, it's our job to listen to them. It's our job to educate them. It's our job to provide them with what their options are, and to help them walk through that process. I mean, I've had countless people who've begun our time sitting down together with a look in their eyes of, could be panic, it could be fear, it could be humor, it could be anything, but they say, I've never done this before, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. And we take that that job of shepherding people through those early days of loss very seriously, and trying to help them find out what their options are and come to decisions and approaches that hopefully help them begin those first steps on the journey towards healing.
It's a complicated process in some ways, because the American perception of death, and also how we've engaged it with our culture, transforms and changes. If you go to a New England cemetery, of course, you see the 17th, 18th century angels and the inscriptions. And that was an era where death, particularly even among children, was very common. That was a large families would have, it would exist because the probability of some children dying of some disease was quite high, certainly in the time of the Civil War. And beautiful cemeteries like Mount Auburn in Cambridge, Massachusetts, or even in New Haven, Grove Street Cemetery, that are historic, are thought of as oases, almost park-like. Today, we have seen some changes. We have different ways of internment and cremation. So I guess from as the perspective of a very authentic historian on the issue, walk us through some of the contemporary changes, the changes you're seeing in the last couple of decades.
Sure. And then you mentioned cremation, and I think that's become very clear as obviously one of the biggest factors. I mean, we look back in our records and our history, and you know, the early cremations that we had, which were one or two a year, maybe extremely rare. We would go to New York because there was no crematory in Connecticut. We've gotten to the point now in our state where more than 50% of the population chooses cremation ultimately as a form of final disposition. So that sometimes that means that services are different, and sometimes it does not. There are times where people will still have a wake, a gathering, a visitation, a service prior to the cremation. Sometimes they'll do it after the cremation. I think in the early stages, when we first saw people adopting cremation out of a desire for an alternative or in their perception of simplicity, I think we saw more of a trend where those folks would not typically have either viewings or gatherings or visitations or services of some format. I think we've seen a shift back from that in recent times. I think people found that there is a need to gather, to tell stories, to honor a life, and to mark a moment of time as sacred, to recognize a person. They may do that in a different and contemporary way than they used to. It may not have a priest, a rabbi, a pastor, a minister, a clergy person involved. We see a more of a secularization in our country as well. So that's impacted how it is that people have their services. And we also see people moving around a lot more than they used to. I mean, and, you know, we went back 50 years, if someone graduated high school from, you know, Lyman Hall in Wallingford, there was a really good chance they were going to live in Wallingford. If they got rebellious, they might go to North Haven or North Branford, or, you know, got, you know, even further, maybe Camden. You know, it wouldn't be that far away. It might be a 15-minute drive. But now we see people where they have three kids and two of them live in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. So people retire and they move to another state for a warmer climate, and then they don't want to be buried there because they don't have roots there. So the impact of where we live also has changed a lot of things, because we have people who are coming home to Connecticut from Florida for their final resting place, or they have to delay services because their children are coming from around the country or around the world to fly in.
So as a funeral director, understanding that technology has changed and also how we approach the event of dying and the celebration of someone's life has changed. How do you get the word out and how do you organize it? I know you have an online presence. People can pay respects online. But at BC Bailey, of course, you've had to navigate getting the word out. It isn't like we have a chance to get the family newspaper delivered, the local newspaper to driveway, open to the obituaries on C7 and go through the list. We're finding out about who has passed away in different ways nowadays.
We are. The print obituary is not completely dead. There are still people that embrace it, but in certain ways, it feels like we're going back to our roots with social media and word of mouth when someone passes away. I mean, back in very early times, communities would have what was called a death crier. It would be a person with a bell, and they'd walk around and they'd proclaim the death to the old English village. Mrs. Anderson has, you know, gone home. She's not here anymore. There were no printing presses or newspapers back then. So, you know, when families come in and they're asking us, well, how soon is this obituary going to be on your website? Because I want to share it on Facebook. I want to send it to my HR director to email out to the rest of our staff. I want to text it to someone. That's become more of a concern in the forefront of a lot of people's minds than it used to be. I mean, even participation. I mean, we offer live streaming of services. We've been offering live streaming of services for probably 15 years now, but no one in the world ever wanted it, or they all thought we were crazy if we offered it until COVID came. And then when they only could have 10 people in a room, or people couldn't get in a plane, or they couldn't travel, or they were quarantining, or, you know, all of a sudden that became a real important technology that, thankfully for us, we were allowed to pivot very quickly towards it because we already had it in place. But it's now become a norm for a lot of people.
Let's talk a little bit about the process itself, if we can, Matt, that if you think about families and people living far away, some families are cohesive, they come together. Some families don't, sadly, come together. There are some divisions, estrangement, mm-hmm. Communications issues. There's a lot of complexity related to this. And the question, of course, is calling hours. If you want to have someone come by your funeral service and pay respects, or a private burial, and then later on, say, convening with a memorial service somewhere. How do you help a family and people walk through that process?
I guess we really navigate who are the people that are involved and how it is that we, you know, address what their respective needs are. So, and I say to, you know, people that there's different needs for everyone involved in a loss, and a loss touches a wider community. So that part of that may be seeing the person. I mean, if a person has been in a medical institution for a long time, and the last memories the family has is tubes and machines and an unpleasant environment, the person didn't look comfortable or natural, for that to be their last memory picture may be problematic for them moving forward. So that their need to see the person in a peaceful position might be different than the need of a coworker who never met that person's mom before. So we talk about, you know, who needs to be involved with seeing the person, who needs to be involved with coming in to tell stories and to pay their respects and to have conversations. You know, we live in a community, in an area where, you know, we have a big senior population because of Masonicare and Asher Village and all of that. So, you know, we have people who will live up there and they may be 94 years old. And if their kids weren't in the community, they may come in and say, well, you know, mom was 94 years old. All of her brothers and sisters passed away. All of her classmates passed away. And their initial reaction may be forego a service. And then as we talk about it and they realize they lived in a community where they had all these friends and relationships of people that really cared about them and want to be able to say goodbye themselves. And they're shocked when they have the memorial service at Ashler and 144 people show up because they thought mom, quote unquote, outlived all of her friends, not recognizing that there are people around who wanted to be able to say goodbye as well. So we kind of explore, you know, who's involved, what their needs might be, and the best way to give everybody an opportunity to begin a healing process.
Well, you've obviously had to deal with this with emotional intelligence as well as business acumen, because it is a family business as well over the many years. So I'd like to ask a question about you, if I can.
Sure.
And as we all have stages of grief, you see it firsthand in your line of work all the time. This is what you do. This is what you see. So in a way, you're like an ER doctor. You're on call in the most moments of crisis, the moments of emotional duress and challenge. So how do you gain perspective as a funeral director? How do you enhance the magnitude of your compassion and the qualifications that earned you the 2021 Funeral Director of the Year Award? How do you grow yourself professionally?
I've worked very hard at trying to meet people and spend time surrounded by people who are smarter than me and I believe better than me, and to try to engage in as much R&D as I can, which we jokingly say in a study group I'm part of is not research and duplicate. It's rip off and duplicate, not research and development. So trying to look at folks out there who've done an excellent job and try to learn from them. And a lot of it also comes from doing it. I mean, I think back to when I started, I started working for my dad, it was about 20 years ago at this point. And I think of those early times I sat down with families versus now and what I've learned over the course of time. I've learned a lot. You know, I haven't been perfect along the way. None of us are. But hopefully anytime I've fallen short, I try to look at it as an opportunity for growth and an opportunity for improvement. And just trying to keep myself aware of new opportunities and new ideas that other people come up with. So when you're talking with a family, you have a library of information in the back of your brain that you could go to make helpful suggestions and to try to figure out how to serve them best.
Excellent. BaileyCares.com is the website for BC Bailey Funeral and longstanding member of the Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce and very engaged in the community. Family business goes all the way back to 1879 right here in Wallingford. We want to thank you, Matthew Bailey, for being with us here on the Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce podcast. We certainly learned a lot.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
If you, as a member, would like to be a guest on the Quinnipiac Chamber of Commerce podcast, please contact Executive Director Ray Andrewson at 203-269-9891. Email randrewson@quincham.com. That's randrewson at quinnchamcom.